gave everything I had for this team. They did the same back, so I'm so grateful to be in this situation. I gave everything to the fans. I gave everything to Canada and all the stops that I made along the way. I'm just so blessed to be in this position.
Oh, yeah, Trey is savage. A big part of what happened last night. What a night. What a win for the Jays.
Got him! Jeff Hoffman finishes it off, and the Blue Jays come into L.A., take 2 out of 3 here, beating them tonight 6-1, and they're up 3-2 in the World Series.
What a ball game.
What a ball game indeed. Game 6 goes tomorrow. Yeah. Is this the team of destiny? Is this, I mean, the word destiny was being thrown around right from early on this year into the playoffs. You got to feel it. You have to feel it. I look forward to your thoughts. We'll talk a little bit more about the Jays in open lines. Open lines at 9 o'clock. We've got a lot of moving parts, a few pieces of the federal budget starting to get leaked. Some of it on purpose, some of it not, but the federal government talking about staffing reductions on one hand and an industrial carbon price on the other. So we'll chat about that and get your thoughts. Are you less worried now about the whole tariff trade thing? It feels like people have become desensitized. Industries, of course, still staking ground and trying to protect their industry. But even that, there seems to be this feeling of weathering the storm. We've got a roundtable discussion coming up at 10 o'clock this morning on tariffs. I've got three great guests joining us there. Also on the show today, AI getting better every day and a weird decision by Alan Hamill to bring back his wife, Suzanne Summers, passed away 2 years ago. Basically, her AI twin is what he has planned. We've got a guest on the show talking about that. All kinds of great Halloween must-visit homes in the province. We'll tell you one that's scaring people for a great cause and a whole lot more. Let's get started. Here is today's Big Talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome.
Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
Well, we know that lots of world leaders are together right now and have been in South Korea for meetings. We heard yesterday that, well, I think what we originally heard was Mark Carney reported he had a very good discussion with the U.S. President Donald Trump. Then it kind of went to, well, they exchanged pleasantries. I saw in a news report last night, they sat down at a table and did the finger gun thing. That's what they did, you know. Hey, how's it going? That's about it. So I'm not so sure that they had any sort of meaningful discussions. But we do know that both President Trump and Mark Carney talked with the Chinese leaders about trade. And I was reading, as I always do, some great writings from Tasha Carradine. I love all of the political opinion that she puts together. Tasha Carradine has been on our program before, a National Post media political columnist. And I wanted to bring Tasha onto the program to talk a little bit about how things are looking right now, where it's at, where we're going. Tasha Carradine, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks, Evan. My pleasure.
So your latest article that I read in the National Post started with the sentence, Prime Minister Mark Carney's in a bind. Can you fill us in on what you meant and what the kind of the intent of your article was?
Sure. Canada is caught between the U.S. and China. On one side, he's got U.S. President Donald Trump, who's now basically cut off trade talks. He was hoping to get a deal with him. Those ads were the cherry on the sundae. It's not going to happen now, at least for quite a long time, if it does at all. So our other big market in the world, you know, the biggest player next to the U.S. is, of course, China. And there's a temptation to get closer to China, especially since they have imposed tariffs and restrictions on imports of our soybeans, our canola, our seafood. They're basically crushing those industries in the hopes that we will reverse a ban on importing their electric vehicles. And so they're trying to play those two elements off each other. And Carney would be in a much stronger position if things with the U.S. hadn't gone south. So now he is meeting with Xi. I think he's actually meeting with him today, like now, we'll see what comes out of that. But it's a temptation. If, you know, if one guy doesn't love you, maybe the other guy will. I don't think that's where we should go.
You know, it's kind of what, as I watch this unfold, Tasha, it feels like I'm watching an episode of Survivor because, you know, when Mark Carney's talking with Xi Jinping, you don't know what Trump has said to the Chinese leader behind Carney's back. And where do you land? There was just an article this morning in the New York Times that talks about the meeting that Trump and Xi Jinping had. And it sounds as if both leaders came away feeling like they won.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, Trump is very bullish on the meeting, even though nothing's been completely set in stone. The goal there for the U.S. is to end the stranglehold China has on rare earths and unlock, you know, access to chips. Because if you don't have that, you know, you can't power the economy of the future without semiconductors and chips, and you need the rare earths to do that. So China controls almost all the market. I think 90% of the market, and they just said, "Well, we're not gonna sell you stuff." So that was Trump's goal, was to unlock that, and it appears he has made progress. At the same time, he dropped tariffs to 49%. They're still higher than the 40% they were previously, mind you. But you know, Xi can say that's a win because they were at 100%.
Right.
So, but Xi seems a bit more sanguine about the whole thing, less excited. So Trump's the one who's really playing this up that, you know, that he got what he wanted. But nothing's really clear yet, but they did apparently have a good meeting.
What's the strategy for Mark Carney when it comes to EV tariffs? And just to kind of back up a little bit, of course, in Western Canada, certainly here in Saskatchewan, our agriculture markets have been impacted by these Chinese tariffs, whether it's canola, pork, peas. It's had an impact for sure. So there's been loud cries to let's ditch these EV tariffs. China will ditch, hopefully, the egg tariffs and we can get back to zero. But I know in your article you talked about it's a deeper consideration than that.
Yeah, this is not an economic consideration. It's a national security consideration, and there can't be a compromise. I hate to say it. You know, Scott Moe's been, of course, defending the interests of farmers, and farmers, of course, deserve to be defended. But the problem is the Biden administration imposed their EV mandate before we followed suit. And the reason they did that was not just to protect the U.S. auto industry. It was for national security, because it was considered that, I mean, if you think TikTok is spying on people, this would be worse. You would have millions of vehicles on the roads with software, Chinese software. They also banned that. They banned the use of Chinese software in American, even American-made vehicles or any vehicles in the U.S., because they feel that there could be malware and spyware installed to track literally the motions of millions and millions of people. And that data would be incredibly useful in you know, a bad national security situation. It would give China an advantage. And so Canada can't afford that either. We simply cannot. China's not our friend. You know, yes, we trade with them, but they are not a democracy. They never have been. Sure, the U.S. is veering down a very anti-democratic path in many ways, but they have a democratic history. We've been allied with them for well over 100 years. That's our friend in this picture, even if they're not that friendly right now. We got to take the long view. China is not. They have a very different goal. And so, you know, the second reason is the U.S. is angry that Canada has been essentially infiltrated by China in multiple ways, business and politics particularly, for the last few decades. And we've done very little about it. We still don't have a foreign agents registry, Evan. Why has this government not acted on that? They voted to do one. They haven't even done it. It is unacceptable. And so if we want to piss Washington off even more, let's drop the EV tariff. I mean, they won't like that. So why do this? We're not in a strong position, but on this one, we've got to hold firm.
Tasha Carradine is my guest, political columnist for the National Post Media. You can read her stuff in the National Post. So is there a way, I don't want to belabor this, because your point about infiltration and foreign interference, 100% bang on. We have been terrible on that front. But how are we going to be able to find a way to get rid of these ag tariffs? Because we're shouting loud in the West, Tasha, but it doesn't feel like the federal government is matching our level of urgency on this.
Right. Well, if that's the quid pro quo, then we can't. Like, that's the bottom line. If that's China's bottom line and says EVs are nothing, then we can't do it. We're going to have to find something else. Not lifting the tariffs. We're going to have to find other markets. We're going to have to find a way to around this, because that it is a non-negotiable. The big issue coming down is national security. I mean, our Arctic is so vulnerable. You're going to have potentially Chinese and U.S. vessels just, you know, scooting through there, trying to assert their dominance. And then there's Russia as well. We cannot afford to compromise on national security. It's just a no-go. So it's not what anyone wants to hear where you're sitting. Absolutely not. But it is one of those things that we just cannot allow.
Tasha Carradine is my guest. Okay, I want to switch gears for a second because we've only got a few minutes left, but I want to talk budget for a second. I read your article on this topic. I think it was published earlier in October. The projected deficit is huge. I think I'm hearing $80 billion. Some sources will tell you closer to $100. How do you expect to hear this positioned in the budget?
So Carney's splitting it out into what he calls capital and operating, and he says he's going to give the total number, but the idea is capital deficit is investment, so we're going to get a return on that, so it's not being treated the same way as operating deficits, which the government is making an effort to cut. I've spoken to people in government who are quite concerned, actually, because there's the 15% slashing, 7%, 5%. They have different tiers for different, you know, types of operations that they want to cut. People's jobs are going to be cut. People are going to be packaged out. Like, there's going to be a trimming of the civil service and the operational side. But meantime, they're splashing out on the other side of the investments, quote unquote, things like major projects, the housing initiative. These things are, they say, will stimulate the economy. And they're not wrong. They will. But the question is, those dollars are being taken from the private sector, from your taxes and mine, or they're going to be borrowed. Could that money be better used to generate money in the private sector if there's less it there, as opposed to, you know, taking it away? How is this going to impact Canada's position, globally, as you know, our credit rating, everything else? It's a huge gamble. Plus, the opposition is now saying the government wants to be defeated. This is a new thing. I mean, our government could fall next week. It is not inconceivable. I still think they're going to find a way to get a few votes by abstention, perhaps, not even votes, but get a couple of people across, not to cross the floor, but just to not be there, not show up. But it's risky. You know, Joe Clark lost his government 9 months after he was elected in 1979, and no one expected that either, because people didn't show up in the House, and he naively thought that he'd get the votes, and he didn't.
So
they have the same situation.
Yeah, it is going to be. We've been talking a little bit on the show, and we talked on Open Lines yesterday about whether or not the government will fall as a result of this budget vote. It's going to be interesting. Last question I want to ask you, Tasha, is we are hearing strongly, in fact, just yesterday, that climate policy will weave through the budget in the way of industrial carbon pricing and likely some other strings tied to outcomes. Can we have both, do you think? Can we have a strong climate policy and see never before seen approach to growing and building this nation? Do the two go hand in hand?
Oh, I think the carbon tax is a terrible one. I think Carney got rid of half of it, and that was good. The industrial piece, there's a place for it, but having a strategy centered around that right now is a bad idea. Everything's in the timing, right? And this is just not a good idea. I think if they want to put a poison pill for the conservatives in there, who have supported them, by the way, on some major projects, clearly when it's, you know, in the national interest, but the conservatives can't vote for that. So they know that they're going to vote against the budget. So that it's a poison pill, in my view, that they may want to, be defeated, or they think maybe they can get those few NDP votes, you know, the seven musketeers that are still there, to maybe say, oh, well, now that that's there, we can support this, right? So maybe that's the thinking, but it's not good policy. It's maybe good politics, but not good policy.
I don't like to play what-if games, but I'm going to, Tasha. If this government was defeated, if the confidence vote didn't go their way, what would an election yield in early 2026?
Oh, my God. First of all, the election would happen. It would happen in 25, and we'd be, trudging through the snow, potentially, campaigning, because the writ's like 35 days, right? So 37 days. So they'd maybe have an election around Christmas. I mean, it would be kind of crazy, potentially, to be doing that. And I think that at this time, it's like the absolute worst time. We thought it was bad in April when we were facing the Trump administration in its early days. Well, now things have gotten incrementally worse. It would be very bad for the investment climate for Canada. It is already being hit. I don't look forward to that. I don't think Canadians want an election. They want a deal, and Carney hasn't delivered so far. So I think that would weaken him in an election, too. I don't think the Liberals should be, if they think it's a good time to play that card, I disagree.
Tasha Carradine, appreciate this. In 10 seconds or less, predictions for the Jays.
Oh, go Jays, go. Of course, we have to win. It's been too long.
Tasha, I always appreciate having you on the program. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Bye. Tasha Carradine, who is a National Post media political columnist. You can read her stuff in the National Post, always having her by, is a great start to the program. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.